This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Good to be back behind the microphone after about a week away. Well, coming up, I just returned from Capitol Hill, where it was announced earlier this afternoon that a Senate vote on the repeal of Obamacare will have to wait until after the 4th of July recess. Does the delay indicate the repeal effort is in trouble or a sign that the internal negotiations are getting traction? Maryland Congressman Dr. Andy Harris will join me in just a moment. And does yesterday's Supreme Court decision on church playgrounds suggest the court is swinging in the direction of protecting religious freedom? The president of Alliance Defending Freedom, the organization behind yesterday's victory, Mike Ferris, will join me later here on Washington Watch. Also, whether it is carelessness or overconfidence, the liberal bias of a number of organizations which have held themselves out as politically neutral is being exposed. Carl Zinnmeister, vice president of publications for the Philanthropy Roundtable, will be here to talk about GuideStar, the nation's largest charity index, and their ties to the left. That's coming up here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, folks, we're coming up to the end of our fiscal year. That means the end of this week, June 30th, is when our fiscal year stops. New one starts July 1st. And this is a great time to partner with the Family Research Council. This program comes to you not by government money. It doesn't come to you by any commercial advertisers. It's all by our partners across the country, and we sure would appreciate your partnership. You can be a part of making sure that Washington Watch stays on the air. Go to TonyPerkins.com and make a contribution. Become a partner with us right here. Well, earlier this afternoon, as I mentioned, announcement was made that said a vote on the repeal of Obamacare won't happen this week. It will have to wait until after the 4th of July recess next week. And this is what Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had to say about it earlier today.
We're going to continue the discussions within our conference on the differences that we have, that we're continuing to try to litigate. Consequently, we will not be on the bill this week. We're still working toward getting at least 50 people in a comfortable place. The president invited us to come down. White House has been very much involved in these discussions.
With us now is Maryland Congressman Andy Harris. He represents the 1st Congressional District. He's a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Not only is Andy a congressman, but also a physician that was serving at the prestigious Johns Hopkins Hospital as a medical officer in the Naval Reserve, and he knows the issues of health care very well. Dr. Harris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, what do we make of the delay in the Senate?
You know, when the liberals took over, when Barack Obama got elected, it took them 14 months to write the Obamacare bill. 14 months. They've been thinking about socializing medicine for decades. It took them 14 months. Now, if we delay a week or two, you know, people think it's this terrible thing. It's not. We're going to get this right. Obamacare is a failure. And we're going to get it right. If the Senate needs another week or two to get it right, you know, that's great. You know, let them take their time, get it right, get it back to the House, and, you know, move it on to the president's desk.
Well, let's look back at what happened when the House was taking this up back in May, when, in fact, end of April, 1st of May, the House had a vote scheduled but then had to postpone the vote. Took about 2 weeks. Freedom Caucus was right at the heart of that. They began the process and the negotiation and actually improving the bill, came back, and it passed the first week in May.
Absolutely, Tony. That's the way the legislative process works. And, you know, you and your listeners both appreciate how complicated, you know, health care and health care insurance can be. We want to get it right. We want to get it right because the country just simply can't afford to have it wrong for any longer period of time. You know, in Maryland, our largest insurer asked for a 58% increase in their premiums next year. That's broken. Obamacare is broken. We're going to fix it. We have to do it right. Again, if we take another week or two in the Senate to get it right, let's do it.
Dr. Harris, I mean, the Senate's a little bit of a different animal than the House. That's probably an understatement. But the diversity of opinions there and the sharp contrast, even among Republicans, is pretty significant. There seem to be some that are concerned about dialing back Obamacare, where you have some that want to see this government-mandated, government-driven healthcare system done away with and return to the private sector, where the whole issue is between the patient and the doctor and the market forces drive it. Do we ever get back to that point?
Well, we're moving back that way, Tony. Whether it's the House bill or the Senate bill, one of the major things we do is we take something like the Medicaid expansion and basically move the Medicaid program closer to the state. And that's what we really have to do, because we have to give people more choices, more options when they're getting private plans. And when they're on Medicaid, we have to have the state shoulder, their fair share of responsibility, and get the states to provide local solutions that work for their people who are on Medicaid, whether it's senior, disabled, children, pregnant women, low-income folks. We've got to get them get those programs working, and the best way to do it is get it back to the state.
Now, Dr. Harris, the Democrats, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer leading the pack, basically saying the sky is falling, people are going to die. Just all these dire circumstances if the Republicans move to reform, replace, repeal, whatever you want to call Obamacare. But the fact of the matter is, Obamacare is imploding. If Congress doesn't act, you're going to see a outright mess in our health care system in America.
Absolutely. Look, Chuck Schumer believes in central government control. There's no question about it. Any movement away from central government control, the liberals will object to. The fact of the matter is, when it's something as personal as your health care, the last thing you want is a bureaucrat in Washington telling you have to buy insurance. This is the insurance you have to buy, by the way. And oh, by the way, it's really expensive and your family really won't be able to afford it.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Dr. Andy Harris, Congressman from Maryland, 1st Congressional District, my guest this afternoon. Earlier this afternoon, the Senate announcing that a vote on the repeal of Obamacare will not happen this week, as earlier announced. It will have to wait until after the 4th of July recess when Congress returns. Dr. Harris, so what do you know about the remaining issues that are keeping the Republicans? They need 50 votes to proceed. They didn't have 50 votes to proceed to debating the bill. What are the major issues that are keeping the GOP caucus divided?
I think the major ones now are making sure that, the Medicaid program changes that we make are not very rapidly disruptive to states that have chosen to do Medicaid expansion. And there are Republicans in the Senate who are from states government has chosen to do the Medicaid expansion. We have to make certain that as we turn control back over to the state, that we do it in a fairly controlled fashion so that no one's afraid that they're going to lose their coverage. And really, under both the Senate and the House bills, it's just unrealistic to expect that no state that did the expansion are going to shoulder their fair share going forward. So I think these numbers of the newly uninsured, they're way inflated. The system right now doesn't work. We have to make sure we have a new system in place that works, that's more affordable. I think the Senate or House bills, either one, actually the way they are just head and shoulders improvements over the failure of Obamacare.
Well, let's take that issue of the Medicaid expansion, because I go back to my time as a state legislator back in the 90s. I was in the late 90s, but in the early 90s, they had the disproportionate share funding where the federal government encouraged the states to expand certain aspects of Medicaid. And as a result, when they kind of withdrew that funding, the states had these huge deficits that they had to fill. Is there any concern that this may occur down the road with that this is just a cost shifting?
Well, Tony, it would be hard to believe that the state, except for Illinois maybe, are in worse fiscal problems than the federal government right now. We have a $500 billion deficit, a $20 trillion debt. To say that somehow the federal government can afford paying this huge share of the Medicaid expansion is unrealistic. Mm-hmm. The states should pay their fair share. They want the Medicaid expansion. I believe they will. I think they'll find the money to do it. But the federal government has no money. I tell people our federal deficit at $500 billion is now more than 10 times the entire budget of the state of Maryland, my home state. And that's just their deficit. So to pretend somehow that the federal government can afford everything all the time is just completely unrealistic. And the most inefficient thing you can do is take a tax dollar, send it to Washington, have it go through a few hands there, only to go back to the states, which is what our Medicaid program does right now.
Well, and this is a way to keep it closer to the people where there's a greater accountability, as you say, from sending the money to Washington. There's very little oversight, and I think, there's oversight, but there's that distance, which I think ultimately leads to running $20 trillion debts that we have here in this country. Let me ask you this. I know that in the House, the president played a key role in negotiating the final version of the House bill. How significant of a role do you think the president will play in the next week or two working with senators?
I think it'll be a very significant role. I think a lot of Republicans aren't used to having a Republican in the White House, and I think they forget how many things a Republican in the White House can do for them in their state. And I think this president, look, he wrote the art of the deal. I think he's going to bring the reluctant senators in and convince them that there is a way to make this deal, to make this happen, and let's move on to tax reform and all the and immigration, the other issues we have to deal with, because we're very, very close. And I think by the end of July, we'll have a bill on the president's desk.
All right. Well, I hope you're right. Dr. Andy Harris, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for your pro-life leadership on Capitol Hill.
Thank you, Tony.
Dr. Andy Harris from Maryland represents the first congressional district there. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You know, this is I'm a little disturbed, perplexed, not sure the exact word, when I look at some of the conversations in the Senate. Now, you've got some, like Rand Paul, saying, you know, I'm not going to do anything that's going to further a government, you know, program like this that becomes a, it's in government entitlement is what it is. And I respect that. I agree with him on that. But I think you got to somehow, we got to bridge back, kind of work our way back. And I think that's what the House version did. You have others that are saying, "Oh no, this is too hard. This might cause some people to fall off the rolls." That's what they're concerned about. This CBO score that says 22 million Americans would not be covered under this. Well, they don't go into great detail that about half of those are by choice, because no longer will they be mandated or required by the government under penalty of law to have health care. So if they're healthy, they're young, they don't want to spend their money on it, they don't want to do it, they don't get it. I mean, look, you can't have both. You can't have big government, cradle-to-grave provision and freedom. The two are incompatible. And what we have is we've created this hybrid over the last several decades when it comes to health care. And getting back to where I think it needs to be market-driven and decided by individuals where, you know, look, you can choose between buying health care coverage or a new bass boat, but you have to make that choice. You can't get the government saying, well, government's got to provide this for me. It's a, you know, it's just one of those things. It's an entitlement. Government's got to give it. All right, when we come back, we got more to talk about right here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. There's more to come.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to be going back to Israel in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love to have you come with us. You know, one of my favorite places to go in Jerusalem is Gordon's Calvary, which is the place where they make the case, a very strong case, was where Jesus was executed. Then we'll also see the Garden Tomb, which is right next door to that, where also a very strong case can be made, was the tomb where Jesus was buried and where he rose from the dead. Well, that's just two of the places we'll see on one day in Jerusalem. We'd love to have you come with us. If you want the information we have available on the tour, go to the website twholyland.com, twholyland.com, for a free brochure sent to you in the mail. Call 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, 800 families, option 5.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
We're in the financial business. We manage a couple of trusts and some estates and, of course, our own monies, too.
Courtney Trotter talks about the charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation.
I understand annuities about as much as anyone, I guess, can. So I just felt the charitable gift annuity was a win-win situation for many people that still are generating income and still have assets, because you never know when you may have to draw down on something like that. And if you don't ever have to, then it's even a better gift to get to a really good foundation like AFA. A very solid investment, a good way to help do the Lord's work, and it's there to help us as well.
Find out if the charitable gift annuity can work for you by calling the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins behind the microphone today. Great to be back on the program. All right. Religious liberty scored big at the Supreme Court yesterday. The court ruled 7-2 that the government cannot exclude churches and other faith-based organizations from a secular government program simply because of their religious identity. Now, this had to do with playgrounds and rubberized material, which comes about from recycled tires. The states encourage this recycling. Almost every state has one of these programs, and so it's very expensive, and so they subsidize it, and they try to get it out there. And so they had this grant program, and a Lutheran school, a daycare, applied for it, but they were excluded because they were a religious entity. Well, the Alliance Defending Freedom represented the Trinity Lutheran Child Learning Center, and yesterday were successful at the Supreme Court. Joining me now is Mike Ferris. He is the president and CEO of the Alliance Defending Freedom. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always good to be with you.
Well, congratulations. This is a big victory.
It is. We're really pleased that the Supreme Court stood up for the principle of equality for religious people. Now, the pendulum has seemed to swing so far in an extreme direction. It's good to have a little common sense for a change, and they held that the kind of thinking that was being advanced by the officials there in Missouri was odious in our constitutional system, which I thought was a really good word for the Chief Justice to use to describe this kind of discrimination.
Well, and a 7-2 decision is pretty significant as well when we have a court that's so evenly divided. So that was sent a strong message, I think. But the newest justice to the court, Neil Gorsuch, explained that this decision should not be read too narrowly to apply just to cases involving playgrounds or children's health and safety. So his comments actually pretty significant in kind of digging deeper into what the court was communicating.
That's true. Justice Gorsuch concurred in the majority opinion and wrote separately to make the point that you just stated. But we actually had action from the court today in other cases that show the impact already. There were cases about school choice programs in Colorado and another one as well, where the court vacated the lower court decisions based on the Trinity Lutheran decision and sent it back and said, try again, read Trinity Lutheran and look at this case again. And so it's already having impact outside the child safety arena. So it's a very exciting development.
Yeah, I think there in total there were four cases that were pending before the Supreme Court that they had not granted to hear. And they, as you pointed out, they sent them back down saying to the lower courts, reconsider in light of Trinity Lutheran. And they were much broader issues than just playgrounds. So I think that's a very significant case, significant decision. Let me ask you this, Mike, because the court also agreed to take up another case that ADF is handling, and that's for a Christian baker in Colorado.
Right. Really thrilled to get that decision as well on the same morning, 30 minutes apart. One was at 9:30, one was at 10 o'clock, and a pretty exciting morning around the Alliance Defending Freedom. We hollered and then we prayed and thanked God for the victories. But this case is the conflict between religious freedom and same-sex marriage advocates who want to force Christians and others who don't agree with them to participate in their ceremonies. And so two men came in, Jack Phillips Bakery in Colorado, and wanted a wedding cake. He offered to sell them any of the pre-made cakes he had there in the store, but they wanted one with a special message. And so it's the message on the cake, not the substance of the cake itself, was issued. He refused to write such a message on a cake. And so it's very similar to dress designers not wanting to use their talents to design dresses for Mrs. Trump. And if they have the right to say, no, we don't want to design your dresses because we don't agree with your politics, Jack Phillips should also have the right to say, I don't want to violate my conscience by putting a same-sex marriage message on this cake.
So when will the court hear arguments in this case?
Usually they're argued kind of in the order that they're accepted. So it would be mid to late fall based on that. If other things happen. The Trinity Lutheran case was put off for a really long time for oral argument, months and months and months, way out of order. And so if one of the justices retires between now and then, it's possible that that will happen again with this case, with the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. But in the normal course of events, it'd probably be November, early December.
So, Mike Ferris, with the backdrop of yesterday's decision on Trinity Lutheran recognizing the religious freedom, of course, that was to an institution being denied. This, with Jack Phillips being more of the individual aspect of religious freedom, connection there. Are you optimistic?
I'm very optimistic because they took it. So that's an indicator that at least four justices wanted to hear the case, and normally that's some indication that they are interested, at least, in ruling in our favor. I think that if this was just, refusing to sell, a package of donuts, I don't think they would have taken the case, and B, I don't think we would be successful. It's the fact that we were coercing a man to write a message contrary to his conscience. That's why this is a combination of free speech and free exercise of religion, and what I think makes this a likely winning case. But it will be very hotly contested. I think it will set records for the number of amicus briefs on both sides of this case. So the world is going to go pretty topsy-turvy for the next few months around this case.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's going to be a very, very important case for a lot of people. Mike Ferris, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
God bless you, Tony. Thank you for your work.
All right, thank you. Mike Ferris, he is the new CEO and president of Alliance Defending Freedom. They do great work, as evidenced by the fact that they won yesterday's case before the Supreme Court, and they got another one coming up. All right, coming up next, conservative leaders have pushed back against the world's largest source for information about charities for using the, get this, Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group designation on conservative nonprofit profile pages. Yes, the SPLC has reared its ugly head again. Well, the pressure has caused GuideStar to back away from the SPLC. We'll talk about it next with Carl Zinnmeister here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like there's a chance we could see four straight sessions of oil in positive territory. Well, that's good news. I guess that's good news for the markets. Tech stocks still seeing a sell-off. But we got some very, very good news. We got some bad news yesterday in reference to durable goods. Some of the other economic numbers have not been really solid like we like to see moving forward. But you might remember yesterday I was talking about the idea of consumer confidence coming out. We get two consumer confidence numbers, one out just today, one coming out at the end of the week. The one out the end of the week is the Michigan sentiment number. This is more the government number that has come out. And there was some concern about it. Now, it was sitting at 117. And let me just say, anything over 100 is a very good consumer confidence number. So I was expecting it to come in a little below that based on some of the numbers that we've seen, particularly durable good numbers. But I was saying, even if it comes in at 115 or 114, it's still very, very good. And I think the markets and traders, the economy in general, is waiting to see what consumers are thinking. The number came in at 119. So beating all expectations, not just mine, but everybody else's. And that is a very, very good sign. Ultimately, you know that the only thing that is really important is consumers and what they are thinking about in reference to the economy, their job, their wages, their discretionary income, so on and so forth. And they must be feeling pretty good about it to see a high consumer confidence number. And that tells us a lot about the future of the economy, I hope.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, the nation's leading source of information on U.S. charities announced it would reverse its decision, this came on Friday, to include the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group designation in listings for some of the nation's most well-known and broadly supported conservative nonprofits, mostly Christian, not all, but many. Well, GuideStar, which calls itself a neutral aggregator of tax data on charities, recently came under fire for using the Southern Poverty Law Center's annotations to flag some almost 50 organizations. Well, joining us now is Carl Zinsmeister. He is the vice president of publications for the Philanthropy Roundtable, and he's been following this story. Carl, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been following this. You've written about it. What do we know with this action by GuideStar to back away from the Southern Poverty Law Center? It appears now that kind of the veil's been pulled back that GuideStar has some left-leaning tendencies.
More than some. It's actually been really pretty well exposed. And interestingly, Tony, including by lots of very liberal reporters who kind of got disgusted with them, dating back some years, who have discovered when they began to dig underneath the covers that this isn't kind of a neutral consumer report style arbiter of, you know, who's beyond the pale in American politics, which is the way they present themselves. That in fact, these are folks that have taken to alarming Americans as a really great way to raise money. The Southern Poverty Law Center is just a cash collecting machine. They collected $50 million in contributions in the latest year. And the way they do this, basically, is by alarming people. They make very strong claims that lump together true, you know, ugly groups of, you know, KKK and various kinds of skinheads and, you know, truly disturbing individuals, which are very, very small in number in most cases, by the way. In many cases, don't even have an office, don't have a website, don't have any money. These are just crazies. And they are grouping and lumping those kinds of groups with very, very mainstream conservative groups, religious groups, groups that are concerned about immigration trends, that sort of thing. And in the process, they're really slandering and sullying big portions of American citizens generally.
The thing I find most disturbing, Carl, and I think everybody has a right to say whatever they want to say within bounds, although, you know, as a result of them putting our organization on the hate map, we had a gunman come in and start shooting the place up. That was his own words. I mean, that was his testimony as he was being interrogated by the FBI. But the Southern Poverty Law Center wants to be this this referee, basically saying this person's viable, this person is not, this person should be able to speak, this one should not. But at the same time, they're participants. I mean, they've been pushing radical leftist policies, and the people who oppose them, they label them with hate group with a hate group label. And probably the most obnoxious example of this was in Minnesota, where a parents' group was opposing the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they labeled them a hate group. I mean, how does that work in American democracy?
You know, they say that they want to be a reference group, but they really don't. They don't even make a pretense of it once you get beneath the surface. When I was doing my research for my story for Philanthropy Magazine, I found a YouTube where the main researcher, an individual who puts together the hate list, a guy named Mark Potok, was videotaped on camera saying exactly this, quote, "Sometimes the press will describe us as monitoring hate crimes and so on. I want to say that our aim in life is to destroy these groups, to completely destroy them." And again, this is not just crazy. This is very mainstream groups, some of which have literally millions of members, some of which have thousands of attorneys working for them, some of them, like your group, which have, you know, tens of thousands of middle American supporters. And it's really a serious thing when you do this, when you start trying to criminalize your philosophical opponents. I mean, as you just said, Tony,
right,
it's very fair to disagree with someone, but it's not right, and it's very un-American to bully and intimidate people by trying to criminalize someone who has a different point of view.
So, Carl, when you have somebody like GuideStar, which is supposed to be this, I mean, well, they are. I mean, they're the largest entity that goes through and looks at the tax data and puts a rating on these nonprofits, you know, to guide donors and how they give money. This whole episode appears, well, it doesn't appear, it would suggest very strongly that GuideStar could very well be in cahoots with the left, SPLC, in trying to choke off revenue going to groups that oppose the left.
Well, you know, let's just remind our readers, who are just getting so much bad news these days, that their end result here was good. The GuideStar tried this for a month or two, and there was a big backlash, and people like our group and your group went to them and reasoned with them and said, this isn't fair, this isn't safe, this is going to foment violence rather than discourage violence. And the GuideStar finally did back down. So they've said they're going to take these labels off. So that's a good result, and we're happy about it. But you're quite right, Tony, it's worrying that a group that, again, presents itself as kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval type of organization ever fell for this in the first place. You don't have to dig very far to find out that, for instance, their own hometown newspaper, the Montgomery Advertiser, which is the newspaper where the Southern Poverty Law Center is based down in Alabama, they did some investigation, and they were just shocked at what a sham and fraud the group is. The managing editor there pointed out in a Harvard speech that this group has never spent more than 31% of its money that it raises on real programs. It's not what it says it is, which is a litigation outfit that protects people's rights in court.
Yeah.
That's the shell game. That's the pretense. But what it really is a propaganda operation.
Carl, we got to leave it there. Up against a break. Thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you.
My pleasure.
All right, folks, don't go away.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? Family Research Council is here to help with answers and insight from our experts. Our work in Washington, D.C. is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any issue that FRC stands for, issues like life, marriage, and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line. We'll consider your question, and you may also have a chance to be published on our blog. Again, that address is frc.org/askfrc. Thank you for standing with us.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Life, Love, and Family, featuring the American Association of Christian Counselors President, Dr. Tim Clinton. Each weekday evening, you'll hear Dr. Clinton and his expert guests address important and sometimes difficult issues of our day that impact your life, your love, and your family, using the scriptures as their text. Access to archive programs is available at lifeloveandfamily.net. Life, Love, and Family, 11 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me again remind you, for the next 3 days, we are coming up to the end of our fiscal year and would love to have you partner with us to make sure that Washington Watch stays on the air all across America so that you can hear directly from newsmakers unfiltered by the liberal media. And to do that, go to TonyPerkins.com right now. All right. I want to continue this conversation. I'm going to open up the phone lines here in just a minute to talk about this, because this is by design, right? You can, if you've not read Rules for Radicals, I encourage you to read it. Saul Alinsky and his book, basically it's the playbook for the left. It's almost their Bible. And it's to marginalize, intimidate with the goal of silencing. And that's what these labels are about, you know, Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, they're a joke with a lot of money, right? They've got about $350 million. So the only thing impoverished about the Southern Poverty Law Center are their ethics, nothing to do with their bank account. Most of this money is in offshore accounts. But here's what they do. I mean, as I said earlier, they get involved in the case in Minnesota was a parents group that was against a policy that the school had adopted regarding promoting homosexuality. And so the parents got together and they negotiated with the school to come up with a reasonable policy that it was anti-bullying that would not promote homosexuality but would protect all kids. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center came in and was pushing this pro-homosexual policy. And when the parents stood up to them, they labeled them a hate group. And that's how they operate. I mean, most of these guys probably, they probably beat up kids when they were in school and took their milk money. I mean, who knows what they did? But they're bad actors. But here's what I want to ask you about is that this labeling, do you see it for what it is? You know, if you're, you think America should not open its doors to those who want to destroy America, who are from a particular religious
orientation, i.e. radical Islamist, that somehow you're Islamophobic. Or if you're for natural marriage, you believe what President Obama actually believed when he, or at least he said he believed when he was elected to office, that marriage is a union of a man and a woman, that you're homophobic. You know, the phobias are everywhere in the mind of the left. How does that affect you? Does it cause you to be quiet, not talk about these things? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. The labeling of the left, does it cause you to be silent? Now, I know for a fact it does, a lot of people. But it shouldn't. Truth is truth. I actually spoke about this Sunday. I believe we need, if transcendent truth is truth, no matter the day, the year, the season, the century, truth is truth. And we don't seek to offend people, but if people are offended by the truth, that's their problem. And they should not silence us by the labels that they want to put on us. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, and we're going to go to Alabama where Brad is on the line. Brad, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for joining us.
it's pretty obvious what Saul Alinsky is doing in the name-calling and what people who follow his tack are. This is called, if you look at logical arguments, this is called an informal fallacy. It's an ad hominem argument rather than deal with the substance of what are you advocating, tax cuts or what spending or whatever. You just call somebody names instead. And it means you've lost the argument on substance alone. You've got to do something else.
That's correct. But with the problem we have in today's society is so few people actually have critical thinking skills and understand what that is, that it's a complete diversion. It's moving away from the fact that they cannot defend their position, so they attack the person who is standing against them.
Yeah. And it would behoove people to, if they could, get a hold of something that not really strong long, but read about informal fallacies and the way, like poisoning the well, which is a form of ad hominem argument, and it's taught in elementary logic class. Kids in high school and junior high can understand it, and tells you some of the ways that they use to try to confuse the argument and get you off the substance of what you're debating, and get you off a reasoned debate and onto an unreasonable, illogical and irrational debate.
Right. And what happens, you end up, you know, they throw these those lines out there, these attacks. You get off of the debate of the substance, which is exactly what they want. They want you off the debate. We need to take it back constantly to the subject matter. And that's where we win. From a standpoint of the reason and the logic is on our side, it's unreasonable if you think about it when you start talking about people being able to just pick and choose their gender for the day as they would a pair of socks. That just doesn't make sense. But of course, if you're against it, there's something wrong with you. You're homophobic or you're transphobic or you're some kind of phobic. Brad, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling in today. 866-372-7234. And let's go to, I think that's Louisiana, where Robert's on the line. Robert, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. What's on your mind?
Well, you mentioned, people being silent when being called labels and things like that. And I really think that the majority of Christians and conservatives are kind of losing the shock value of being called those kinds of names, you know, bigots, racist, sexist, those sorts of things, and really getting a backbone and being able to speak out and defend ourselves and even being more proactive, and I think it's showing in our nation too. I think the direction of things are starting to turn around, and we have a bright future as long as we keep hope and keep God in our country and keep standing up for what we believe in.
You know, it's a really good point, Robert. I think we've talked about that, how I think the left in using these labels and spreading them so generously that they're diluting its their effect. And they're just, you know, everybody they disagree with, which increasingly is more and more people, they slap a label on them until basically, you know, 75% of America is walking around with a label for this 25% of extreme leftist. And, you know, people are looking around, wait a minute, you got a label? I got a label? But you're normal. I'm normal. You know, so I think they are starting to see that the people here with the issue are not the ones that have had the label attached to them, but it's the people attaching the label. Robert, thanks so much for listening and calling in. All right, let's go to Mississippi where Kathy is on the line. Kathy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Absolutely. What's on your mind today?
Oh, a lot. This thing about labeling, who gives a crap about what we're labeled? I mean, what is this? I don't really understand. I don't care if I'm labeled or not. If
well, good
I know
for you.
The truth, you know, right and wrong, this is 2017, people.
You know, that's an excellent point, Kathy, when you understand right and wrong. Okay, there's where we have the problem is in first they've tried to eliminate right and wrong. Everything's relative. It's, you know, you can basically define your own truth, which is, that's another story. We're not going to go down that path. But for those, and I'm going to speak just to Bible-believing Christians. The Bible is true. The Bible speaks to every aspect of life. I'm going to tell you right now, you can count on it. It has proven itself true time and time again. It has stood the test of time. The transcendent truth that it speaks of has stood the test of time. You know, fads come and they go, but truth remains. And so you can either anchor your life to that truth and go through the storms, and you can wear the labels, and you can be attacked. But guess what? You're going to emerge on the other side of the storm. Truth is solid. It's unchanging. God says, I am the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's not changing. He's not running a poll to try to decide what people think today about human sexuality or that seems to be the biggest issue. People, that's always been the issue. I mean, go back and read the Old Testament. It was an issue back then. It's always been an issue with human beings and sexuality. God says, do it this way, you'll be blessed. You know, confine yourself, be pure, be holy. And the world's always got a different message. And society benefits when we live according to God's standards. I mean, do you think we would be nearing a pandemic of sexually transmitted diseases if we kind of went by God's standards? I don't think so. Almost one in every three Americans today has a sexually transmitted disease. You don't hear a lot about that. Billions of dollars each year to treat this. So what? So what, people say something, call you a name. Like Kathy said, if you know right from wrong, stand with right. Stand for what you know is right. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Kathy, thanks so much for the call. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Michigan, where Artis is on the line. Artis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. And first, a comment on what the last caller said. But the problem is when you get labels slapped on you by groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center, look what happened with Floyd Corkins.
Yep.
They believe it, and they act on it. That's a problem.
Well, and that's why you're absolutely right. And that's why there should be some self-policing. First off, the media should not give credibility to the Southern Poverty Law Center because that is giving basically a platform to them to put these labels out here to inspire people like Floyd Corkins to come in and shoot people. Same thing if you saw that the shooting that happened with the Republican members of Congress, my friend Steve Scalise, who was shot. That guy that did the shooting there, of course, he was dispatched by the Capitol Police. He had liked the Southern Poverty Law Center's Facebook page. We'll never know how deep he was in that because he was killed. But clearly in his rants on social media, he was being fed a daily diet from the left. It should also be a reminder of us to us. You know, words matter. And I'm not going to say I'm perfect. In the heat of the debate, there have been times when I've characterized people in a certain way. But we try to stay and do a pretty good job of being focused on the issue and debate the policy, not the person. And you can do that. I did that when I was in office. I would aggressively, and I mean, look, I see things pretty black and white. I think if you listen to this program, you know that. And I am passionate, and I would passionately argue my positions and would go toe-to-toe with the opposing viewpoint. But, you know, then I'd go out and have dinner or lunch with those individuals that I was opposed to on the policy, because it was directed at the policy, not the person. And of course, from a Christian perspective, we have to constantly remind ourselves our goal is ultimately not to win a debate. We shouldn't back away from a debate. We should be confident in speaking and defending truth, but ultimately our goal is not to win an argument or a debate, but rather it is to win a heart and win a mind over to Christ so that life can be transformed. That's the reason we speak the truth. We don't speak the truth to win. We speak the truth so that others might come to know the truth. And as a result of coming to know the truth, as Jesus said, that they might have life and have it more abundantly. So for the very ones that we're opposing, the reason we speak truth is so that they might come to know the truth and have the freedom that is in the truth. That's why we do what we do as Christians. And so I want to encourage you not to shrink back in the face of these labels that are slapped on you or the intimidation that the left attempts to do. Look, it's time to be bold. You know, that's one of the reasons I admire this president. Don't agree with him on everything. But you know what? He has refused to be silent in the face of withering opposition from the media. They're coming at him from every direction. Artis, thanks for the call. Sorry I'm not going to get to the rest of the calls. I want to let you all know I appreciate you listening and calling in. But there's tomorrow. So, Lord willing, I'll be back, and I hope you will as well, because I know there's going to be more things happening here in Washington over the next 24 hours that we're going to want to talk about. So until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.